A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today, we're talking about dinosaurs with Dustin Growick. We're going to be talking about dinosaur penises. We're going to be talking about the size of dinosaurs, why some are so huge and why some are so small. And we're going to be talking about, I forgot.
Birds.
Oh my God.
You forgot birds.
Me. I know, are dinosaurs birds? Are birds dinosaurs?
Birds are dinosaurs.
Okay, well, spoiler.
Birds are freaking dinosaurs.
I got thrown off because Greg was like, don't talk with a voice.
No. Oh my gosh.
And
no,
then I was like, oh my God, do I sound natural? Do I sound natural? And then I was like, this isn't my voice. Now I'm putting on a fake natural voice. And I was panicking and then I forgot and you have to save me and here we are.
No, my gosh. I'm just saying, and I also appreciate it from everyone. It's like whenever we're doing filming and people help us, they go like, it's hard delivering scientific information. Naturally is hard.
Delivering scripted information is hard too.
Oh yeah, scripted information is hard to sound natural. Mm-hmm. And so I personally love the journey of trying to figure it out and get better. And I just made a comment like, because you were going over what we were going to say.
And he said I was talking like some other podcasters.
No, I was just saying, just say it the way you would say it to me if we were having a couple drinks. And then you were just sort of like, I can't do that. And I was like, no. I'm not saying you have to do it exactly. I'm just like, just try.
I said it would be boring if I just.
No, it wouldn't.
I'd be like, so we're going to talk about, it would just be too mundane. And I was like, the podcast listeners want excitement. They want, what's the word when you make your voice go
bombastic
up and down?
Bombastic.
Range. They need range.
Dynamic pentameter. I hear you say that. What is that?
Wait, what?
Dynamic pentameter.
What?
No, you'll be like the dynamic pentameter. Wait, said that to me all the freaking time.
Pentameter.
Wait, stop gaslighting me.
What are you talking about?
Dynamic pentameter.
What is pentameter?
It's a type of metric line used in traditional English poetry and verse drama.
I have never used the word pentameter. I don't know what that means.
It describes the rhythm or meter established by the words in that line.
Let me see the word.
It's like the dynamic pentameter. Oh wait.
Pentameter?
It's iambic pentameter.
And it's
I think it's what we're talking about.
It says pentameter.
Pentameter. Pentameter.
I don't Greg.
Pentameter.
Who taught you this word?
Okay, I honestly thought you did.
I have truly, are you lying and you just actually searched it in something?
No, look, iambic pentameter, and it's literally about like the classic way that people talk, like, well, hello, like, welcome to the blah, blah, blah.
Like a newscaster?
Yeah, like literally when you watch the news and you're like, why are you all talking so insanely?
So it must be that we talked about that and maybe you looked it up. Because I honestly thought
that you taught me this. It just means someone else taught me this.
Maybe, yeah. I've never ever heard this. Especially if it's pronounced pentameter. I've never heard
it. I thought it was like staccato. Or like something like music vibes that you taught me. Like something like, oh, the crescendo on that Lord song was impeccable. Like the iambic pentameter of Lord's voice.
Maybe the syncopation is something I would say, or the...
Well, no, then you know what? I taught you something.
Thank you.
I'm going to go research it. Iambic pentameter, like my iambic pentameter is like
faggy
and gay. It's mine.
That's what
like,
it means.
It's very like... Like, well, and then we go to the store and then we buy the store. And like, that's how I talk. Your iambic pentameter is, you say boring, but it's not. It's actually soothing and great.
I need to know that you actually know what this word means.
I don't know what this word means.
Relax.
I thought you just said you want the podcasters want to bump. You're telling your guy. Now you're just changing your mind. You say they want energy. I'm giving them energy. Say, shh, calm down.
Oh my goodness. I just want to make sure you actually
knew
that phrase and you're not giving it a definition that is not accurate.
Okay. I will say
I'm
that.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just double fact.
Well, will you let me fucking talk?
Oh my God.
I thought that it was dynamic pentameter and that's what I said. And now I get to go, well, that's embarrassing. That's recorded for everyone in history to know because I Google it and it's iambic pentameter. Gun to my head, someone said,
so
before
read the
reading this, said, what is it? I would have gone dynamic pentameter or would have had my brain blown off because they would have been like, that's wrong. A line of verse with 5 metrical feet. Oh, God.
That's pentameter.
Each consisting of one short or unstressed syllable followed by one long or stressed syllable. For example, 2 households, both alike in dignity. I don't know.
Greg, that is not.
I don't know. It's like the classic way of like speech for poetry.
But you're infusing that now that you're reading Wikipedia.
A healthy heartbeat. Like what is?
Okay,
a healthy heartbeat
something?
Follows the iamb with each pair of beats resembling the iambic foot. So it's like the thump.
Are you sure it's not how people read poetry? Like. Da 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 da.
So an iambic pentameter is like da dum da dum da dum da dum
da 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 da.
So it's like, so you know what? When next time you intro this, I want it to be an iambic pentameter. Today,
so that's too hard.
We are.
Learning about
dinosaurs.
Really, my module this week is going to be about one of these next week when I come back and I'm like, Greg fully made this.
I don't know what's going on, but all I know is we're in a fight. Let's get into what we learned this week.
Oh my God.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Well, I certainly don't know if we learned about iambic pentameter because I'm still confused, but like, go.
I was going to say mine's about getting triggered. So it kind of fits into what was happening. I'm curious. Oh my God. Excuse me. Are there any sounds that trigger you?
Yes.
What?
Styrofoam. It's so basic. I hate being basic. I'm scared of being basic. That's why I'm always like, oh, look at my weird, quirky fishing shirt or like whatever. Although that's so basic, but for gay guy, it's not. But, when those like smelly, stinky,
what?
Like markers that we used to all have, it'd be like blueberry. And I'd be like, are we giving ourselves brain damage? We're just sniffing markers.
Yeah.
But like that used to come in this styrofoam sheet. And I remember I loved those markers. And when they were brought out, I would have to like run to the bathroom if I was in a classroom or run upstairs. And I'd be like, Mom, can you take them all out, put them on the table and hide the styrofoam? Because like from a very early age and even till now, like, you know, if a box comes usually from some company that they're like our new product, I'm like, I hate this because I have to now go through my worst noise ever to get to some overpackaged thing I didn't even ask
Fair.
For.
So that has not really anything to do with my study, but I was going to talk a little bit more about, so if people have dislike of when people chew too loud
or breathe too loud,
thinking of sounds people make in particular, anything like that that stands out for you?
I don't like loud chewing. Like, I don't know why. I just don't. But I know I do it.
When your jaw clicks, it actually freaks me out. Sometimes Greg's jaw makes a little clicking noise.
Yeah, my jaw is like really bad.
So to talk about it, this is either called misophonia or misophonia. And around 6 to 20% of people have it. And scientists actually maybe just discovered why some people feel so much more strongly about it than others by watching the brain.
Okay, wait. So do I have it? Cause
no. So, possibly. But the styrofoam thing, I think based on what I'll bring up later, that that's a very common because it's actually quite screechy. It's actually an uncomfortable sound. It makes sense that it's not that enjoyable.
It sounds dry to me. Like it sounds like it lacks moisture. Like it sounds like it's like we're all going to die because there's no more water on Earth.
Okay, but go. Okay, we'll get to that. But going to the typical ones of chewing and breathing, and sometimes people are like disgusted when other people are chewing too loud or whatever. They realized in a study of people who both had it and don't, the people who have misophonia, the connection between their auditory cortex and motor cortex of the face is overactive. So. And it goes both ways. People can be triggered by something visual and it stimulates their auditory cortex. And they're like, hey, this is interesting. And so what they figured out is when someone's triggered by chewing sounds, there's actually mirror neurons going off in their brain. And it creates like a very strange sensation of intrusion is what they think, because you're not chewing.
You're like, I'm not chewing, but I'm hearing it.
You're
can
like,
you
I
stop?
Hear it and I'm not. And so as a result, it feels creepy, and they've realized that they think this theory is correct because one of the most effective management tools for this is to pretend to start chewing if the thing is chewing that bothers you. If someone...
Okay, that is so interesting, but also psycho. Like, imagine someone annoying like, chewing, and then you're looking at them chewing like, back, like, well, I guess I'm gonna join you.
Or if you hear someone breathing too loud, if you focus on your own breathing, it kind of connects those... that your brain like auditory and like, physical sensation to connect so it doesn't feel so bizarre that you're hearing that noise and not feeling the sensation.
That's so cool and like interesting? Tactical.
They say it takes back control of your motor cortex.
I love mirror neurons. Like the strong times I feel mirror neurons is during the Olympics and like Canada wins. And then I'm like, I just won.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened in years because I actually like, A, the Olympics are canceled again, but also like I don't love the Olympics. But as a kid, I would be like, Donovan Bailey won, like I just won.
Yeah, I know. It would feel that way. I guess that's why people love sports.
It is.
That's why we love Drag Race.
I know. I it is. It's the thing about sports. I'm just like you know, when straight guys are like, we won last night, like to their friends, like, when like the Leafs won, I'm like, girl, you drank beer and sat on your freaking ass all night.
Oh my God.
But I there's something about that. That's like, that's my misophonia. When straight guys say we won because the team they like that worked so hard won. That's my misophonia.
That's so funny. You should, yeah, you should put that in your bio.
And be like, I hate when straight
my misophonia.
Lame.
Ultimately, the end result was they said in more of this research, instead of just focusing on the sound centers of the brain, which what people always think, they should actually also look into the motor sensors of the brain. Interesting, huh? It's quite cool.
We condemn those scientists. Condemn?
Is that the wrong? No, commend. Okay, yeah, pentimonial, whatever the
yeah,
fuck
yeah, trying
was.
To have any ounce of being I like, listen to me on a podcast because my brain's worth listening to. I'm like, we condemn all scientists on ASAP.
Okay,
all
right.
So what I learned about was, I don't know how you pronounce it, microplastics?
I hate you.
Microplastics? I don't know, something like that. So,
there are people right now going, what is he saying?
Microplastics.
Okay, yeah.
So everyone loves to talk about a microplastic because they're actually really horrifying. Mm-hmm. And they're tiny pieces of plastic that either sadly are designed to be small, like horrible skincare products with like not natural exfoliants in them that are like actually tiny beads of plastic that now I'm like, why the hell did we ever do this? Because that's such a horrible waste. It's bad for the environment and it's just stupid. So if you're looking for an exfoliant, please just always make sure that it's not using microplastics. It's using something natural that breaks down, because it's just, oh God.
Yeah.
It usually means like if it's by like freaking Kellogg's or like, I don't know, Unilever or whatever, maybe go a different direction. But
well, I think they're banned in Canada, aren't they?
But they're not banned because they're, well, okay. So
in
then
soaps, I mean,
the other thing is that microplastics also just end up being small fragments of any plastic that you've used. Yeah. A plastic bottle ends up microplastics because it breaks down because the currents of the ocean are absolutely ripping it apart and eventually gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And so small that they can be, a microplastic can be defined as 100 nanometers in diameter, which is as small as asbestos flakes, to as large as 1 millimeter, that's volume. Imagine I said volume. Millimeter in diameter, which is about the size of, like, if you picture fish eggs in some sushis. Like kind of like small.
Bro.
Yeah, so you could see it with the naked eye.
Okay.
The freaking nude eye. So the fact that there's such a wide array of sizes, including that small, they're so hard to study. The larger ones, the size of like fish roe, are easier to study, but there's just so many that they're doing all these surveys to figure it out. And they now think that in a year, this is sort of the worst estimate, like the worst case scenario, but like it's becoming more and more likely, we consume a full credit card of plastic a year.
Just like into
through microplastics. Yeah. Oh. And so the interesting thing is,
well, girl, a credit card, not bad.
I know, I love it. They use credit card. I'm like, capitalism seeps into every single aspect of science, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like they could have used so many other things. I guess that's a very ubiquitous.
It actually was. Yeah. A really
I was like, wait, what? I was like a hard drive.
Why I'm literally. Know what I want to start doing? Calling my credit card. Don't some people say like, you got the plastic or something? Yeah, isn't there like, what people is it? Say,
yeah.
How
yeah.
is it said? Yeah,
like that. Like,
put down your plastic
yes.
or something. Oh my God. I wanted like, not that I've seen anyone or been anywhere where I use, like I've just been stuck at home, but like.
You'd be like, I got daddy's plastic.
Yeah, daddy's plastic. I wanted daddy to give me plastic. So it's like, I want, so I'm going to go and then I'm going to be like, have a dinner with friends. And we're like, no, don't worry guys. I'm going to put down my plastic. That's what I want to do. Sometime That's this week.
Not cool.
Is that not cool? Oh my God, I'm going to try so hard to make that happen. It's going to end up so not cool. I mean, like the meal is going to be nice and actually end. I mean, like, guys, I'm going to put down my plastic. And they're all going to be like, you're paying for us? And
you're like, did you get Botox?
Yeah.
Or plastic surgery?
And then I'm actually going to be like, and I'm actually not paying for you. I just want to say that. So there's not a necessary correlation between this being bad. Like the study I was reading was in Nature magazine about how some of these things disrupt your endocrinology. For example, our penis episode, go listen, hilarious. But we do talk about the sad aspects of some of these plastic. They're not the actual plastic. It's the chemicals in them seeping into us. So there is a chance that these microplastics, we just shut them out and our body doesn't.
Not enough is in us to actually harm us potentially.
Yeah, or we actually get rid of them. But what they're realizing is now they're getting so small based on just the sheer amount that there is on this planet with the heat and just like, it's just, honestly, it's disgusting what we've done with plastic to our planet, that some are getting small enough to go past the blood-brain barrier. Like they're that small.
Oh, no.
So they're just like, but they're just like, but that's just something we need to know. And then now, there's a bunch of studies happening that aren't conclusive yet. But I was just like, oh, God. And for everyone who's like studied science, the blood-brain barrier, that's a important one. There's a little barrier between all your blood and your brain. And it has a good membrane up there. Because it's like, as your body, it's like, we're going to keep things out of the brain. So lots of things don't go there. But the things that do have to be small and they have to get through. And if the plastics do, I don't know.
I'm thinking of like the book that I'm reading because I just honestly can't think of the name. Oh, A Thousand Brains. It's a new book. It's really cool. And I was just thinking about the future of how we're going to need little robots in our brains to clean out the plastic.
Oh my God. I secretly love that.
You know what I mean? Like we're getting closer to using little robots inside of our body to help us, whether that's implanted chips or things in our body that are helping like little robots to build proteins.
Okay. So we're about to talk about dinosaurs. I just wanted to say something that this whole week learning and researching about dinosaurs in preparation of this conversation made me think. I want to write a kid's story based in the future because what happened is an asteroid hit, okay? That's how we got birds are dinosaurs because birds survive because they could fly or birds are dinosaurs. Like the asteroid hit, so many things died except for little tiny rodent mammals that become us.
Yeah.
And then birds, which become birds. Hello, I'm obsessed with birds.
Yes.
Not dinosaurs. We'll talk more about that later. The future climate change hits, humans are wiped out. The little kid story is about a bunch of series of little mice rodents that are maybe a little different because they've evolved. And they're using all of our leftover plastic and garbage to try and survive. Like they have like little helmets and they're melting them down. But it's a metaphor as them going through again, like how you have to conserve and reuse. Because some of them are like, let's just burn the garbage. And it's like, no, you can't because that's going to get you back to the same place. And I thought about that yesterday as a little story.
Cute.
So it's like
what
in the future.
What were you on?
Marijuana. But like it makes you, it was like that thing in the future. Like instead of robots in our brains, we're actually wiped out. But what are going to be the little like plastic things that like mammals are like that survive are going to like use and evolve with?
Cute. I'm excited to see a little storybook of mice with plastic helmets.
There we go, burbs.
Okay, well, let's take a little break and then we're going to jump into our dinosaur chat. Yeah
there you go. That's the weird potamic entameter. I'm like, you asking me? Of course we're gonna do it. It's our podcast, bro. Okay, listeners, honestly, literally listen up hard for this one. So as you know from listening to Side Note that we talk about climate change and the climate crisis all the time. We're always trying to figure out how we can display this information to people. And it can be very challenging, and it's affecting all of us. And as a white person, it is not affecting me nearly as much as many marginalized communities. These are just things that we all should be thinking about as we move forward into the future. Okay, anyways. So what you might not be aware of is how your bank is funding the industries that are causing the climate crisis. In Canada, for those listening in Canada, we're the only G7 country that has seen emission increases since the Paris Agreement in 2016, during which time the five big Canadian banks have pumped over $700 billion into fossil fuel projects. So what we need to do is a form of activism. It's called, Bank Switch is the name of the campaign. This is what we're going to try and get you to be involved with. But it's figuring out how to switch your banks to not empower them to continue to use fossil fuels. And especially in the Canadian economy, that's something that a lot of our banks do. And there's ways that you can actually change where your money is to help make a really big impact. So anyways, join us by learning more at climatepledgecollective.org/bankswitch. So that's climatepledgecollective.org/bankswitch. And I'll put the link in the description below. But what you need to do is click on it. It's going to help you figure out how to change your money away from these horrible banks that are ruining the environment. Okay. Whew. Sorry, that was a lot. And it's just like a passionate sort of thing.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're like us, and you maybe are the friend that's constantly talking about the success that you're feeling through therapy, maybe you're hearing your friends talk about how they're loving therapy, maybe you're confused. How do I start? How do I find a therapist? What do I do? That's why we are here to talk about BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your personal needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist that you can start communicating with in under 48 hours. The counseling is done securely online and is available worldwide. Not only can you schedule weekly video or phone sessions if you don't really want to have to put on the makeup for the fair, although maybe you should check yourself if you're putting on makeup for your therapist. I think I have put makeup on for my therapy before, so never mind. You skip the long commutes. There's no waiting room energy. There's no, you know, that awkward 10 minutes early, what I do, just sit on my phone, waste time, energy, because you're doing it at home from your computer, for example. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor and get timely and thoughtful responses. BetterHelp lets you change counselors at any time, so you'll always get a great therapeutic match, and it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. It's more affordable. And there's financial aid available. Okay, ding, ding, check, check. Just head to betterhelp.com/sidenote to get 10% off your first month. This also helps our show if you do this. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionales. Again, that's betterhelp.com/sidenote for 10% off your first month.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time. Study time.
All right, it's time to talk about some dinosaurs. We have Dustin Growick with us, a dinosaur expert, a dinosaur lover. He's got a YouTube channel. He posts about dinosaurs on Instagram. I believe you just had one of your final shows, like your
Dino 101.
You tell it, Dino 101 right. Just finished. Thank you so much for coming to the pod.
Yeah, of course. I mean, any chance to nerd out about dinosaurs, I'm there. Remotely, IRL, doesn't matter. Let's go.
We're honestly really excited because I'm working on like a dinosaur video right now that, depending when this comes out, may coincide with this podcast.
and maybe people have watched it now, but it made me, it reignited a like love for dinosaurs that I didn't really know I had. And I'm excited. That's going to be the study I referenced today, but I want to know like what, why you like dinosaurs.
Yeah. When did the love start, Dustin?
No, it's a good question. People always assume it's like, oh, you must have always loved dinosaurs. It's like a kid, everybody loves dinosaurs. But it wasn't until I was working in education at museums that made me like fall back. And like, I like dinos as much as any other kid, but I wasn't like a huge dino nerd until I worked in the museum and was surrounded by them all the time, because I very quickly realized dinosaurs are a gateway drug to science. Full stop.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So like, I'm so curious about this, because I'm like, I have to say, I like definitely like as a kid, I loved science. And there is this weird, interesting thing with science in general and dinosaurs where it was like, I loved science. And so then they would be like, you love dinosaurs. And I'd like draw a triceratops or whatever and be like, well, I don't actually really get it.
That's like a really hard one to draw.
And even now I'm like, I just like, I'm so into you convincing me. Okay.
Greg needs to be convinced.
I need to be convinced. Okay. I love birds.
Okay.
And birds are dinosaurs, correct? This is my question. Are they?
Facts, yes.
They literally are.
Yes. That's so crazy.
Yes. So when you say all when you say dinosaurs are extinct, we technically mean all non-avian or non-flying dinosaurs went extinct, but literally every bird you see on the planet today is not just a descendant of, but is literally a living, breathing dinosaur, which I think is, can I curse? I can curse.
Okay. That is so that,
you can curse, wild. Curse. Okay. That okay, is good. Fucking shit.
I think it's fucking amazing, because that means, no, it means we have actual dinosaurs. You can look out the, you can't watch a T-Rex or Triceratops walk down the street, but I can see birds. I can literally eat them every day if I want. And it, so you can actually look at an animal that's alive today and glean really good clues about how animals looked, behaved, took care of their young, ate, you know, that haven't been here for 65 million years.
That is so cool, because I got gotten into birding in the last year, which I thought was so cool and unique. And then our newspaper in Toronto is always like, now everyone's birding. And I'm like, well, I thought
true.
I was unique.
It's true. Yeah.
But it's literally a thing. So I'm like, I actually have fallen deeply in love with birds. So I have technically fallen in love with dinosaurs.
Yep.
And
yep.
So now I want to understand, because an asteroid hit 66 million years ago.
Yep. Okay.
Quote unquote wiped out the dinosaurs. So birds what? Like lived? And mammals lived? Lived?
Well, lots to unpack there.
And please unpack.
Yeah. Well, no, first of all, I love that birds were your gateway drug to dinosaurs, because dinosaurs were my gateway drug to birds. It's like now I'm birds. Yeah.
Okay.
So yes, most people at this point have come to agree that an asteroid killed the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
There was a mass extinction about 65 and a half million years ago that didn't kill just dinosaurs. It killed 75% of all species. So like one of the big five mass extinctions. So why did birds survive? Which is a great question. Like if every other dinosaur died, how come birds are able to survive? I generally think there are three reasons. One, birds are opportunistic feeders. Like they'll eat like whatever. If there's not meat around, they'll eat plants. If there's not plants around, they'll eat seeds. If there's not seeds around, they'll eat insects. So one, opportunistic feeders. Two, they're small, so they don't need a lot of calories. Like think about how much calories a triceratops needs a day to sustain itself. So one, they'll eat anything. Two, they don't need a lot to eat. And three, newsflash, they have wings, so they can actually fly, right? They can travel a fair amount of space pretty quickly to find that food. And so I think for those three reasons, that's why birds were the only dinosaurs that were able to survive that extinction. But you're right, mammals did too. Thank God, because we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's what I mean. I'm like, also like some rodents and shit like survived too. But I'm just like, holy shit. I just like only this week when sort of trying to force myself, be like, okay, Greg, learn about dinosaurs. You're about to talk to someone who loves them. You have to get on the page. That I was like, holy shit. I didn't think it was going to be that easy to just be like, birds are dinosaurs. I thought that I was hyperbolic statement, right? But it's like you're saying it's not.
So no, it's not. And it's easy to say it. It's a little bit harder to like explain and like have like the logic behind that. Same. So taxonomy is a science, and you guys know this, where like we're grouping different animals based on shared characteristics. Like all members of the feline, the cat family, have certain features that make them a cat. Same thing with dinosaurs. Like there's this whole suite of like over 30 different features that if an animal has it, technically it is a dinosaur. Birds have all of those, but to make it easier for you guys, literally any animal you see, alive or dead, that's got its legs directly under its body and it has scales and or feathers, that animal is a dinosaur, right? Legs straight under its body. Now, we're not a dinosaur because we don't have scales or feathers. Our legs come right down under us. But any animal, legs under its body, scales or feathers, that thing's a dinosaur.
Oh my gosh, horny so cool. for that. And then,
so wait,
horny for that observation.
There's always an exception in science. There's always an exception. So pangolins. Pangolins, man. Because pangolins are mammals. Their legs are under their body. They got scales. But they're not
dinosaurs. So they are not. Okay. Right. Even though you might think they look like they could be
they
a dinosaur.
They do look a little bit like
they
dinosaurs.
They have dinosaur energy for sure. They're on the dinosaur wavelength in my brain. But they're
That's true. And also, not, like, crocodiles have dinosaur energy as well. Like, gators and stuff feel. And I guess they've been around a long time, right?
Well, that's the example I always use. Yeah. Crocodile. Yeah. Reptiles, like crocodiles, predate dinos. And but if you think about them, like, their legs are split out to the side, not sitting on their body, which is not as an efficient way to move on land. Like, imagine trying to walk while doing a push-up.
Yeah, they're, like, floppy-ass, like, when they're on land, I'm like, girl, that's not where you should be.
Well, yeah, because it makes sense. If you're in water, you can push it side to side. On land, like, it's a very weird thing. And that's why I always argue that, like, dinosaurs have their legs right under them, and they're the first major group of animals to completely abandon life in water and live only on land. And if you're on land and your legs are right under you, like us, move a lot faster, more efficiently. I think that's one of the reasons why they're so successful.
That's so interesting, because you've talked about before how, or there's been, like, you know, what's the perfectly evolved human, and they talk about how, like, bipedalism in, like, an ostrich or an emu would be a more efficient leg for humans, because it's, like, designed without, like, an ankle that's going to roll and break, and it's, like, literally designed from the get-go to be standing upright.
Yeah. Like, our feet are designed, like, in some ways to, like, hold onto a branch. That's why they're absolutely fucked. And I can, like, every time I run, I'm like, I'm in pain. Yeah. Like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing.
I'm curious, does your interest go past learning about and sharing about, like, have you ever wanted, or have you ever, maybe I don't know this about you, like, been into actually, like looking at dinosaur bones and, like, being out in the field?
Paleontology, if you will.
So I've been on a couple digs, and it's incredible. Like, most of my background is in science education and museums, taught in classroom as well. So, like, I'm not an actual, like, PhD paleontologist out in the field. That being said, I've gone on digs because it's an amazing experience. Cool. But also, you have to be so patient. Like, I try to be as patient as I can in my normal life. But, like,
where is the bound?
At some point, I mean, I have some level of ADHD, I'm sure. So, like, I have all the respect in the world for the people that can be out on their hands and the knees in the hot dirt for hours, meticulously, slowly chipping away, waiting for that one big find. Like, it's a great thing to go and do and experience and help out for a week. And if you're listening to this and you want to, so many museums and universities are looking for volunteers every summer to come and help
out.
Come
dust off a little bit of this dust. We need some more help dusting.
I see, that is so funny.
I would want someone to be like, okay, we know there's a bone under there. Come get me. I'll drive there.
You just want the reveal.
And then I can do, like, the final little also.
You're
and if
just
I was
a reveal queen.
And if I was a paleontologist, I for sure would, like, when no one was looking, we'd be like, grab the fucking shovel and just, like, start shoveling and then, like, crack right through, like, the most important like femur bone or whatever. Yeah. Like, that's such a funny thing. Like, I totally never thought about how much patience. Like, I could not.
Yeah, no, I've actually never thought of that either. And but I do think about the first people who discovered dinosaur bones. And I think I've read that they thought they were whale bones at first because they just couldn't have imagined that they're be a creature. Like, you know what I mean? Think of being the first paleontologist or human to just be digging up bones and being like, what the hell is this giant thing? Is it fake? Like, clearly this is not real.
No, I've never heard the whales before. That makes sense. I've heard dragons and, like, giant humans. Like, there used to be a giant race of humans. But also, the funny thing is, like, the first people that were finding those, this was right about around and even before we even, like, collectively believed extinction was a thing that could happen, right? It wasn't until, like, Cuvier, was it, like, 1803 or so that, like, people started to be like, oh, yeah, things that have existed on this planet aren't here
anymore.
Oh, my
God, they can't go away.
Right? That's such a good point.
And then you find these things, and there's no, like, for, like, a plesiosaur, like a marine reptile, like a Loch Ness monster-looking guy, there's no modern animal that you can even really compare that to. And so, like, it's funny to think about, like, paleontology as a very young science. Like, we've been doing astronomy and math and biology for, like, literally thousands of years as humans. Paleontology and the study of dinosaurs, I don't know, like, 200 years old tops?
That's
so it's ironic.
Nuts.
It's ironic.
And yet they're, like, such old things. Yeah.
Okay, that brings me to a question. Like, do you have a, like,
I like, I'm so scared of dying, hot take. But like, do you like, and like, and the meaninglessness of everything. But it's like, do you not find like, I think part of the reason why I don't love dinosaurs is because I like birds, because they're here right now, and it makes you feel this connection to like what we're around. And I'm like, do you ever have a hard time like being like, oh, I'm just learning about, you know, like 65.5 million years ago when everything was wiped out? Like, it just makes me like scared.
I'm thinking about like these Werner Herzog motivational posters with like a dinosaur on it, and it's like, my existence reminds you time is fleeting. Like, is that basically
Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're learning and you're obsessed, and so about these things that went extinct, these things that ruled the planet, and an asteroid most likely, like I think that is you're right, the most common, wiped them out. There's just like this impermanence. Like, does that ever seep in to like, or are you just like, no, it's fun all the time and I'm able to just like enjoy these things that are gone?
So it's funny because I haven't really conceptualized it as impermanence. Like, the fact that they're not here to me is one of the reasons why dinosaurs are so intriguing, because they're like, I've said they're a gateway drug to science and whatnot, but like, you can be you guys, you can be like a 6-year-old who's read some books, or you can be someone who's like 80 and has a PhD and has been studying dinosaurs forever. But like, ultimately at the end of the day, again, there's not a T-Rex walking down the street. So like, your ideas and conceptions about what they look like, again, how they could have moved, what they ate, their colors, how they took care of the young, can be just as valid or accurate as somebody's been studying forever. And in that way, it's like a great equalizer. Like, we all collectively do science because we're curious and we want to learn more. And there'll always be more for all of us to learn about dinosaurs because they're literally not here. And like, to me, that's fun and aspirational and optimistic.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good answer.
Yeah, and I bet many
that is probably
people who study physics and cosmology and like space feel that same way, where it's like, there's so much to learn, because it can obviously make you existentially be like, we're so small, there's no point of anything because we're like a speck of dust in the universe.
I have those
but
days.
I think a lot of people hold on to
I know, like, we all have those days. But I think physicists have their whole like, but we're gonna find the answer, and it's like, okay, good luck, bud, you know what I mean? They're still like, we're gonna find the answer. Like, I feel like you're right. There's such a creativity to thinking about dinosaurs. And I have a question now. I also really want to know about dinosaur penises, so we'll get to that. Sure. But what do you think would happen if there was no asteroid? Like,
good
would
question.
Dinosaurs, like, would any of them
have
gotten smart enough
tell you
to, like,
what I
be,
think.
Like, have, like, Wi-Fi? Like, that's such a stupid thing to say.
They were around for, like, 100 million years, weren't they?
Would primates have what?
I have heard that they actually maybe were on their way out anyway before the asteroid hit. Like, they were...
I heard raptors were actually really smart.
I think you're both right, actually. No, like, a lot of people argue, like, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the world 65.5 million years ago. Like, there was a lot of climate change. There's a lot of volcanic activity in what's now India. There is evidence, like, in the fossil record that maybe they were starting to be on their decline, and this asteroid was, like, the final death blow. But we don't know. There's if you've never looked up like speculative dinosaur evolution, like Google image search that shit, because like it's the idea of what if they didn't go extinct. And of course, so much of it is like anthropomorphized, where like a raptor slowly evolves to be like upright with hands and stuff,
literally a human.
Like, yeah, it's like basically serving burgers at McDonald's. We're like, yeah, that's weird, capitalism somehow seeped its way into this metaphor too. Oh, okay. What was it? Speculative dinosaur? I want to Google
like,
this.
Well, specifically, a guy did these mock-ups of Troodon. It's T-R-O-O-D-O-N, Troodon, which we think is probably the smartest dinosaur. I mean, we measure intelligence a few different ways, one of which is like brain to body size. And for them, Troodon was like almost on par with dolphins as far as that ratio goes.
Wow.
which is relatively smart.
We all know,
right?
Dolphins are freaking smart.
Yeah, right. They're starting their own McDonald's.
Fun dolphin fact I learned once. There are like 5 countries that have given dolphins non-human person status. So they're like people, but they're not humans, like legally. I don't know what that means. But I think
like,
it's
like in order to like conserve them, or just be like, they're seriously smart and they love to fuck, so we just need to keep them going, and just like we need to treat them as equals.
Yeah,
I love that. I'll give more animals human status.
Yeah, dolphins are adorable. Like, I'm into that. That's like a. I love dolphins. I've never swam with a dolphin though. I'd also be terrified and excited at the same time.
That's how privileged our lives are. We're like, well, but we haven't swam with a dolphin yet. It's like, That is an insane aspiration, but so I'm like, I've had a good life, but never swam with a dolphin.
Oh my God.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, and maybe you had heard about this study. It was pretty recent. And so this is mostly to share with the audience. Don't ever, if you want to correct me at any moment, please, please do. Don't feel like I'm trying to tell you something. But there was like this kind of unknown thing, or they realized like a lot of carnivorous dinosaurs, especially in the Cretaceous period, are either really massive or really small, but there's not that many that are like medium sized. And I guess for a while it's been like, the question is like, have we just not found the fossils? Like, do they not exist? And if they don't exist, why? And so in this study, they basically compared it to modern day mammals, where there's typically a gradient. And like, if you go to like places that have been the least touched by humans, you see like there's the, you know, big ones, medium, small ones. And what also is really unique about dinosaurs is that there's like so many more big ones than small ones, which is also the inverse of carnivores today. So I guess because like small carnivores can partition, they don't need a lot of resources, like you were even explaining with birds, and they can partition their resources really easily. So it's kind of makes sense that there'd be so many more small ones. But dinosaurs, it's like they were more kind of like T-Rexes kind of walking around at the time. And so what they started realizing was, okay, why is it like this? Can we look into this? They were like running all these models to figure out what is this gap for. And at first they realized, okay, a big part of this is egg size. So an egg can only be so big. So a T-Rex gets huge, but it can only lay an egg of a certain size because of the way gas exchanges through the egg. So they were like, all right, you can basically be as big as a border collie at max when you're born as a T-Rex, which is like a way different organism than a massive full grown T-Rex. And so ultimately, which is true of both carnivores and non-carnivores, but we'll get to the herbivores in a minute. Is there another name for herbivores? What do they call them?
Vegetarian
sauropods? Is that, what does that mean? Sauropods is just
sauropods are the long, like brontosaurus is the long neck, just the long tail ones, which are also herbivores. But
so basically they figured that what's probably happening is that these small T-Rexes actually have a completely different diet than these massive T-Rexes, which can literally go chomp on any dinosaur and kill any dinosaur. But the baby ones are too small, have to find a different resource. And the teenagers, likewise, are probably almost like ecologically a different, not a different species, but fill an own niche that they would have been competing with medium-sized dinosaurs and ultimately probably won. And so the reason there aren't so many medium dinosaurs is because T-Rex teenagers were probably just out-competing them. Then they, of course, grow to be full-grown T-Rexes. But that leaves like this
weird
gap.
So that whole middle section, the gap is it's the teenagers.
Exactly. And vibes. Then their hypothesis is the reason this doesn't happen with, you know, sauropods or herbivores is because they can partition resources more easily. So like a little long neck can be reaching the bottom of trees and they can be sharing the same tree and there's less competition between them. Because obviously they also start super small and grow even larger than T-Rexes, but they're not like competing in the same way with other animals.
It's always the dang T-Rex.
Yeah. Why is the T-Rex so famous?
It's just so, is it the biggest predator? Isn't it the, I feel like I don't love dinosaurs. Couldn't get through that Steve Bartlett dinosaur book everyone loved. Don't tell him or whatever his name was. But like, were they not the biggest predator or the biggest predator that's ever lived?
The T-Rex? T-Rex had the strongest bite force of any animal that's lived on land. I don't know. Wow. Random fact. But like,
no, that's the kind of shit I like to hear.
Okay. Cool. Well, all right. It's 12,000. While we're there, it's 12,000 pounds. I don't know what that is in kilograms. What's 12,000 pounds in kilograms?
Like 500 kilograms.
Wait, no, we're still in pounds.
We use pounds. Well, no, Canada uses kilograms, but for like our own body weight, we use pounds.
Yeah. No, we got pounds.
Okay.
Just don't bother saying shit in a mile. Don't tell me miles.
Or ounces is the word.
Give me an ounce and I'll fucking punch you.
Okay. Hey, I don't know how much. What was I saying? Anyway. They had a really
You were gonna spitball T-Rex facts, and I want to hear them.
So chaotic. Like, let's all take a breath.
Mitch, you know that you're always like, come on, Greg, give the kids what they want, energy, and then all of a sudden he's telling me to take a breath.
No, you were
tell me T-Rex facts.
You want a T-Rex fact? Okay, so you asked if they were the biggest. There's a couple other ones that are just about as big, maybe slightly bigger, like Spinosaurus, which has been in the news a lot recently, was a little bit longer as far as weight goes. Not really sure. There's Cardontosaurus, which is about the same size. So it's like up there. It probably wasn't like the actual biggest carnivore ever, but almost. the fact that I, let's see. So their teeth are big. Here's, you ready? You may not know this. You may not know this, but T-Rex had big teeth.
Oh my god! Yeah. No, but they did. They really did. Like, it is actually crazy, and they could crush so many things.
Right. So, well, no, I like that you said crush, because like 12,000 pounds per square inch of bite force, which is like 12 grand pianos falling on a space like an inch wide. Plus, I bring up their teeth, which I don't even call teeth anymore. I call them murder bananas. Because obviously,
yes.
My favorite thing people don't know is like on two different edges of these like murder bananas, there were serrations. So on like a double-sided steak knife on each side of this 12,000 pounds of crushing power. Oh my God. They didn't have any, like, they're not chewing their food either. And so with that much force, they're basically just biting an animal in half and then pooping it out, partially digest. And I say partially because we have found T-Rex coprolites. Coprolite is fossilized poop that are like 50% bone. So like, biting a triceratops in half, swallowing all the bones, partially digesting them, and pooping out a chunk of bone, which sounds painful now that I think about it.
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah.
Like
on both ends, yeah.
Like I can see also the allure of dinosaurs. It's like if you're trying to think of like an evil, horrifying monster, like you'd think really? That was like hyperbolic. You'd be like, oh, like a giant thing with huge teeth that are serrated swallow giant things all. And it's like, people will be like, well, that's a bit much for like evolution and like physics. But it's like, wait, what? That was like, that happened.
The norm as well.
Like there's no monsters good. Like that now. Like there's like bears.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I think the largest.
Which are like cute.
The largest land carnivore now, I think, is a polar bear.
And it's like, that's like what sells us Coca-Cola. And we're like, they're actually adorable. Like it's like a T-Rex. It's like.
Well,
horrifying.
To be fair, how do you feel about how dinosaurs have been portrayed in terms of like the feather debate, in terms of like, I've heard people say like they would have more flesh and muscle. Like a lot of the models that were originally made were just like bone and like tissue. Like,
yeah,
and so
like
they might actually look quite different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, again, we can't see them. So it's really hard to judge musculature and fat and skin and all the soft parts. That's one of the reasons why I love the evolution of dinosaur art, like over time, like paleo art, because these, first of all, sometimes the paleo artists actually have like anatomical or dinosaur training, but a lot of times they're artists that are using other people's research about animals that we can't really see, using fragmentary remains to try to make up an animal that no one knows what, like the colors or how much fat or muscle. So like it's really interesting to see the way that we've depicted things change over time, which is usually like slightly lagged from the actual science on the subject. And then people, once they get an idea in their head, it's like, that's what it is. And then it takes time to slowly make changes. Like there are people now, even though like it is widely known that so many dinosaurs had feathers, like Velociraptor, but people still like, no, I don't want to see them with feathers. Because like
that's
that challenges,
so funny.
Yeah, it challenges the preconceived notions of like what we grew up thinking about. And that's another reason why I love dinosaurs, right? We're still figuring out and will always still be figuring out what they look like. Always.
I love that people are just like, don't put flowers. Don't put feathers on my fucking velociraptors. Like, I can totally like see how it's like Jurassic Park and all these things. Right. It's just like, don't put feathers on them. But there were feathers on them.
There were on velociraptors specifically. There's a lot that are still speculative. We're not sure. People think at this point T-Rex had some level of feathers, but we know that velociraptor did.
Which oh my god! I really want to see the diagram of that.
Yeah, I have seen it. It looks funny. Yeah. I saw when I was looking up stuff for this. I saw a fossil of a velociraptor. I think attacking a triceratops. Like they call it like dinosaur. I forget the name of the fossil, but it's like they think that like a landslide must have covered them while they were in the middle of a fight.
No,
and the triceratops has a mouth on the velociraptor's arm, and the velociraptor has its claw in its face, and it's like
fully feathered.
Yeah, and then people. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't think you can see the feathers on it, but I saw a recreation of someone drawing that, and the velociraptor was fully feathered in the recreated drawing.
I am obsessed with dinosaurs. So you're telling me a mudslide fell on them in action?
You're talking about the fossil is like incredibly famous because it's gorgeous. It's crazy. It's called the Fighting Dinosaurs. It is a raptor and a dinosaur called Protoceratops, which is basically like a mini triceratops, same family. Yeah, and they think a sand dune collapsed and killed both of them while they were locked in combat. And I love that you've seen it because like it's One of the arms of the Velociraptor is bitten in half and broken by the Protoceratops. It's got its other arm wrapped around the back of its frill, and it's got its like claw in the neck of the, like, it's such a crazy moment in time captured.
Yeah,
it's bonkers.
That's crazy. And then to think that a dang like sand dune fell on them. Like, well, they were trying so hard to kill each other, and it was like, whoops, like Mr. Bean moment, like you're about that.
Here's a question for you guys. I just told you that we know Velociraptor has feathers. How the hell do we know that Velociraptor has feathers?
Oh, fuck.
I know.
I taught this to kids as a science teacher. Now, there's an issue because I totally forget.
I don't actually know. Yeah. Like, is it based on their relationship genetically to birds at all? Or can feathers be preserved at all in some weird medium?
Is it holes in their skin?
Oh, you... Close.
You tell us.
Okay, so there's a couple ways you can tell if an animal... I'm not talking about like, oh, they're related, so probably feathers. So one way, like, you've probably seen the famous Archaeopteryx fossil. But if you saw it, you'd be like, I've seen that. It literally translates to first bird. And it's beautiful because there's a whole splayed out featheration on the sides of the bones preserved in the rock, right? You can see the feather impressions like outlined. And so clearly this thing had feathers, right? So that's one way, but that's not how we know a velociraptor. So in velociraptor skeletons, they found a couple that are so well preserved that along the forearms, and this is the dots, the holes you're talking about, in modern birds, on the forearms, there are these little divots, like little depressions. They're called quill knobs. And there are spots in modern birds where feathers attach tendons to bone. And so in this velociraptor, on the bone were those same spaced out little divots, which is a really great indication there are actually feathers attached at all those sites. Which, again,
cool.
Can I share my screen with you? I know this is a podcast, but I just want to see your reaction.
We'll totally describe it. We'll gasp you, super loud okay, if you've, necessary.
Yeah, exactly. You have to let me share it because I want to show you this picture.
Oh, I'll give you permission? Okay,
yeah.
I think make him the host.
How do I do that?
Oh, my God, you're topping us on our podcast.
I know, right?
Damn.
Who knows how to use it? What do I do?
Okay, go to, pin. Make host.
This is behind the scenes, insider baseball, guys. This is how a podcast production
recording
works.
I just don't know if it'll make us stop recording.
Hold on. You guys vamp while I'm trying to...
No, do it on your phone and hold it up to the screen. That's going to be the best way to do it, I think. Because it will stop the recording. Yeah.
I like that you just thought that this image of a feathered velociraptor that I have on my computer, I'm just be like, oh, here, it's on my phone right here. Like, you thought it's just ready to go on any platform. But no, it's okay. You guys can just look up feathered velociraptor. Okay,
tell the audience what to Google.
Well,
or
just
say, hey Siri, play Velociraptor with feathers.
Well, I mean, if you just look up feathered velociraptor, there's a bunch of great paleo artists that have made a lot of really cool renditions. But if you look up Jurassic Park feathered velociraptor or velociraptor feathers, there's a cool like side by side where you see the image of the velociraptor from Jurassic Park, which by the way is based off of Deinonychus. Velociraptor is like a third as big. That's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
whoa, I love that.
Yeah.
Smack Steven Spielberg with that knowledge.
No, I mean, they chose the name Velociraptor because it sounded scarier than they thought. A side-by-side where someone has taken the Velociraptors from Jurassic Park and then put feathers on them so you can see what it looked like side-by-side. And they look like weird, scary eagles almost.
Yeah.
Birds! Yeah. They look like birds!
Look like birds with alligator faces.
Oh my God!
Yeah, a bird with an alligator face is a great way to put it.
They're just as scary. I kind of was picturing feathers making them feel very not as scary, but they're actually like really creepy with feathers still.
Yeah, I ask that question a lot. I ask people all the time, like, do you think they'd be scarier with feathers? And most people are like, no, I think they'd be less. I think they're more scary.
Equally,
at least
we've been taught feathers as like, at least as gay men, I'm like, a boa feather around that, like, I'm just like, oh, these everyone's like, don't make my velociraptors gay, but I'm like, no, those kind of feathers are fucking scary.
Hey, I'm gonna make feathers even scarier. So quick sidebar, feathers probably evolved for like either for gliding and flying, for downy tufts for warmth, or maybe for different coloration for like mate selection. But also, for instance, velociraptors got feathers, can't fly. In order to hold down struggling prey, if you've got feathers on your arms, you can create much more pressure to hold a larger struggling animal if you have feathers to flap your wings to hold it down. Right.
So even if you don't need it to fly, it gives you like an advantage.
Oh my God. It actually just makes you scarier.
Yeah, it makes you scarier.
Like, I was watching owls the other night in our park. It was so freaking cool. And then a hawk came towards the owl, and the two owls just, like, flapped their wings so big, and it was so scary, and the hawk flew away. Do you know what I mean? And it was like it was like when the owl put its wings out, it was actually like, that's horrifying. Right. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, like in some context, it's like, look at that gorgeous wing. But when it's like, ah, it's like actually like, okay, that's horrifying. I'm running away from that.
You really are a birder now.
I truly am. That's all I'd be. Nothing else to do in this quarantine. I just go to the park and hang out with owls. Question: dinosaur cock, dinosaur penis. What are they? Did they have them?
Do you mean, what are they?
They don't have.
They don't have.
I'm making this shrug emoji. So, dinosaurs. So baculums are penis bones. A lot of most mammals have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know this, but humans do not.
Okay, we did a podcast on penises recently, and wasn't Natalie a bit like, so are there bones? And I was like, how the hell do you not know? There's boners, no bone.
Right, exactly. And so we haven't found any baculums in the fossil record of dinosaurs, so we know they didn't have baculums. So you got to look at modern corollaries, which are alligators, crocodiles, birds, which all have cloacas, which I like to think of as like one hole to rule them all. Right. Okay. And so, you know, it's one hole for pee, poop, and the sexy time juice exchange. That's the technical terminology.
Ooh, sexy time juice exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
Gonna keep
sexy
that
time,
one?
Sexy time juice exchange. someone's gonna open up that as a smoothie shop.
My god, barf, barf.
Let's see. So some birds, though, have internal penises housed inside their cloacas that come out and like during time of mating. But most birds practice cloacal kisses, where they just smash those holes together. And from the male's hole, he sprays the sexy time. What did I say? Sexy time.
Sexy time juice mixes.
We already all forgot.
We already forgot it. Whatever.
The jumbo juice.
Yeah. So that's probably how they did it. But now that doesn't answer what would probably be the next question is, okay, so how big would those penises be, right? That's obviously the next question.
You're at my mind.
Right. So you have to look at modern corollaries again. But if you look at even like the biggest alligators and crocodiles up to 15 feet long, not the penis, the animal.
I'm like, wow.
We're talking like 4 to 6 inch penises for a 15 foot animal. So like not so big. Versus,
what do you mean
ducks?
Not so big?
For some
dinosaurs,
we're
packing niche.
Right?
I'm joking,
right? But then, if you look at like ducks and waterfowl, some of the oldest lineages of birds, by the way, ducks have. Here's another YouTube suggestion.
Dicks.
Yeah, yeah. So YouTube, averted duck penis, and you will watch a 7-inch penis come out of a duck that's only like 12 inches big. So like a 7-inch penis, a 7-inch corkscrew penis on a duck, and then you have a 4-inch penis on a 15-foot alligator, which means a T-Rex penis will be anywhere between the size of like a 20-ounce Coke and like a Kia Sorento. So like, there's like, you know what I mean?
My
like,
God.
There's no.
Depending on who you are, you're like, do you want them to have like a big girthy dick, or do you want them to have a small, teeny little micro penis? Right. You can play with that in your mind. That's why we love dinosaurs. Right. The imagination gets to run wild.
Exactly. Nature's greatest enigma.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Okay. I love that answer. I love that it could just be micro penis to schlong of the stench. Because I was actually just like, why have we not talked about dinosaur dicks that much? But I guess because we don't know.
The other thing. In my mind, the obvious next question is, okay, but how, like, literally, how did they mate? Like, think about Stegosaurus. Yeah. Like, Stegosaurus is covered in plates and spikes. Like, how do you make that over? Safe sex?
Like,
yeah, like, how do you have safe, I'm talking about air quotes, safe sex
like, killing
when you're
other.
Covered in spikes? I don't know.
Spikes.
Right.
That's
but,
so weird. And even,
oh my God.
Even like T-Rex, like it doesn't even really have the arms to like get on top somewhere. Like how would it even?
Oh yeah, the dang stupid arms on the T-Rex.
Right. There was one theory. This was a legit theory from a paleontologist that sauropods, the big, like the largest animals that ever walk on land, the big long neck dinos like Brontosaurus, the female, like the male would have just weighed too much for the female to be able to mount it. So this guy proposed this theory that there must have been something he called sauropod sex lakes, where they would go into the water so there'd be added buoyancy so the female could actually take on the weight of the male while mating.
Oh my God.
So now you guys are vaxxed, if you're vaxxed, you got to go to the sex lake.
Oh
sex
my
lake
God.
Summer. Yeah.
Sex like summer. I honestly think that's romantic. I think that's really romantic.
It is.
But isn't it like not safe for humans? Aren't they like don't have sex in hot tubs and like in water because it's like not
different
not
episode, different episode,
different species.
We're sex positive on this pod. Banging all the liquids you want. Oh my god, that is so that's a smart paleontologist. I love that theory, and to me there's really, I know there was likely not music, but there was wind in the trees and there was a romantic vibe
atmosphere
to that buoyant banging.
Yeah.
That's amazing. My god, I love dinosaurs, but I'm also like weirdly turned on. by the biggest things ever having sex.
Are there like things that paleontologists or you yourself expect that we will discover about dinosaurs in the coming decades?
Ooh, like new science.
And, like, or things that paleontologists expect but just haven't yet confirmed? Or is there anything out there that you would be like, I could see this happening, that people realize this?
I mean, well, first, dinosaurs in new places, I'm throwing up air quotes again, because the majority of time dinosaur science has been a thing we've looked in like England and the American and Canadian West, right? But the last like 15, 20 years, we found dinosaurs in literally every continent at this point, including Antarctica. So, but in the last like 15, 20 years, amazing things that are like Mongolia, India, Morocco, Egypt, South Africa, lots of parts of China. So we're finding new weird species in new weird places because we're finally looking in those places. So that's one. Second, way more things are going to – we're going to find feathers on a bunch of different stuff. We're trying to figure out coloration on a lot of feathers. So there's way – so in modern birds, a microscopic – so something called melanosomes or a microscopic structure – that the shape of those correlates with specific colors in the feather. And in certain really well-preserved fossils, you actually have evidence of those structural melanosomes, and you can see their shape. And then you compare that shape to the modern bird shape, and you can be pretty sure that feather was a certain color. So
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Places, colors, feathers, maybe some Cretaceous mid-sized carnivores. We just haven't found them yet.
Oh, true.
Remember,
also,
you have to always remember, like, it's incredibly rare for anything to fossilize. And so, of course, it's going to be much easier and more often that we find giant bones rather than like a tiny bone, right? So, of course, in the fossil record, we just have more big things because they're easier to find. They're easier to fossilize.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like a smaller creature would just likely.
And so they must, when they're looking at the fossils, if like the asteroid, it must just be like dinosaur fossils, asteroid hits, then all of a sudden no more dinosaur fossils and just.
Yo, that's a great lead-in. There's something called the KPG boundary. And so that is literally a line in the rock. So you go anywhere in the world and you can look in the geologic record. And so the line is literally exactly at 65.5 million years. And you, like, anyone can see the line because it's a different color. It's like a darker color. And when you look at the minerals of it, it's like it's almost entirely iridium. And iridium is a really rare mineral on Earth, but it's found in incredibly high concentrations in meteorites, right? So you know a giant thing 65.5 million years ago smashed the Earth, threw its guts in the atmosphere, and then they settled all over the world, leaving a literal line in the rock that under that line, dinosaur fossils, above that line, no dinosaur fossils.
That is so cool.
So freaking cool.
And it makes you realize how cool science is at just deducing things over time. Like knowing, even like physics does this too, where they're like, we know there's a black hole because of the things that we can't, or like because of the way everything else is behaving, we can't prove it's there, we can't see it, but it's like in the same way that it's like we see this line, so we assume there was an asteroid because it gives us all these hints, even though we don't necessarily have like 100% concrete evidence for it.
You keep on getting more and more evidence. I love that you brought that up, because the theory I just explained, this was, once people thought that and recognized that, they're like, wait a minute, then there should be some sort of large asteroid crater somewhere that's dated at that exact age. And it wasn't until literally the 78. I always mix these two up, two things that are always blowing my mind that happened so recently. One was like, we didn't know how whales evolved until the 80s. Like, we didn't know whales spent time in water. That's the whole thing. But like, it wasn't until like 30 years ago that then we actually found a crater that we thought was the right size and the age of the rock around it was the right thing. And that was in the Yucatan Peninsula called the Chicxulub crater. So now we have a crater that matches the hypothesis we made earlier about the exploding crater or exploding asteroid.
Right.
Wow.
Putting
together pieces. Cool.
And it is just like sometimes when people are like worrying about an asteroid hitting Earth, I'm like, girl, that is not like as if. And now I'm like, holy shit, that's probably what the dinosaurs thought. They're probably just like chilling.
Then
like,
they're McDonald's.
Yeah, like, you know, like, we're fine. And then it's like, no, you're actually not. And only the flying ones are going to be good, but and a couple of rats that are going to become humans. Oh my God. And it's also on, like, that's funny that you think it was like on the dinosaurs' potential already way out that the asteroid hit, and the way we're going with climate change, like the asteroid's going to come. It'll be a little bit of irony in the universe.
Yeah, right. I swear.
Cyclic nature. Oh my God. Okay. I need to know if you have anything else you have. Like, are there any.
Yeah, we're about to wrap up. Is there anything that you need to tell us?
You would be remiss if you just.
Tyrannosaurus Rex were hot pink.
T Rex probably had feathers, by the way. T Rex probably had feathers.
Okay, cool.
Because we found so many of their smaller, very close relatives with feathers. And so we can make that assumption the same way that, like, Lucy, the Australopithecine, like the first upright human ancestor, basically. We don't have any fossils of them with hair, but like every primate on the planet today has hair. So that one probably had hair too. What else? We talked about dinosaurs as a gateway drug to science. We talked about tied for my favorite, Deinonychus and Parasaurolophus. Parasaurolophus is a great one.
Parasaurolophus, okay.
That's the one that has a 3-foot-long, meter-long head crest. That's a nasal passage where the air like would go in. It's like basically having a trombone attached to their skull.
Yeah, and they're like friendly herbivores, right?
Friendly herbivores.
Yeah, they're in Fantasia.
Okay. Are they?
All right. I feel like they're in that Fantasia thing. But I can picture it. I can picture a trombone head really helped me. Mm-hmm. Love that one.
Yeah. That one's great. I love that one. Let's see. What other fun facts have we not said? Dinosaurs were around and still are, but the extinct ones were here for an incredibly long amount of time. Like, there is more time between a Stegosaurus and T-Rex than there is between you and T-Rex. It's like
blows my mind.
Oh yeah. My God.
A drawing
makes
like
you realize
a drawing
like how
you.
Long they ruled the world.
Yeah, like how long have humans ruled the world? Like not that long.
Yeah, dinosaurs were
and in fact we're fucking it up
years.
So bad.
So quickly.
Yeah, I know. It's like dinosaurs didn't have like create
they
plastic
didn't deserve
and fuck
the
everything
meteor.
Up this fast.
Yeah.
Well, the asteroid hit, so good luck, boys.
And also, the length of time they were here reminds me, like, you're right. Humans, we've been here like a blink of an eye, geologically speaking. So if aliens really ever have visited this planet, it's much more likely they showed up during the time of the dinosaurs, and someone should make that movie yesterday, because aliens versus dinosaurs would be amazing.
Oh, my God. It's like Predator versus Alien, but Alien versus Dinosaur. Yeah. That is a good one, and aliens bursting out of dinosaur stomachs, and the dinosaurs...
I want 10%. Just whoever does that, I want 10%.
Yeah, no, that's good. That
is a good one.
Also, more dinosaur movies. Like, hello, the fascination's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we need more, and make it animatronic.
The next Jurassic World, I think, is coming out relatively soon. I don't know.
If you could go back in a time machine to check it out, would you? Or is that too terrifying?
I thought you were going to ask me when, because I'm not exactly sure when. Would I?
Oh my God, okay, love that you love dinosaurs enough to know that it was like the hard question is like, which part of the dinosaur?
Okay,
like,
that is another question, because obviously I would go back to check it out and then like immediately zap out if they were going to kill me. But
what is the question?
Like when would you want to go to?
Is it trombone head? Is it,
I don't know. That's such a good question. Like, part of me wants to say like the day before the asteroid impact, like, just, you know, everyone's out there having a good time.
True.
Because
just
so many
to,
of the
like,
iconic
see.
Dinos. Right. And because like T-Rex, Triceratops, like iconic dinosaurs are right then. But also I'd love to go back like way, way early, like 200 to 230 million years when like dinosaurs were first starting to really take over because they looked so much weirder and different. Like you had prosauropods, which are like sauropods, again, the long neck brontosaurus ones. Prosauropods were the early like basal ones, which were still sometimes walking on two legs. Like think about like a tiny brontosaurus, but those, and you have some like really like coelophysis, which is a really small, fast one, the first dinosaur with a furcula, like a wishbone. Like, so I would either go to that. Here's my answer. I would either go right to the beginning of dinosaur time or all the way to the end.
Oh, right to the
one
end.
One of those two.
Oh, that's a great answer. Yeah.
Great sandwich. Sandwich it. It's great.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Dustin, you did it. You like, I might finish that dinosaur book now.
I know. I don't know if you know which one we're talking about. It's like The Rise and Fall of Dinosaurs. Came out.
Steve.
Bart.
Steve.
And everyone loves it. And we both started it and then we just kind of like couldn't get into it. But I want to give it another shot because I feel like it was also in a year when I read like so few books. I feel that I was just not having it that year.
And we'll come to Dino 101.
Yeah, well,
the dinosaur show.
Not over now.
No, but you're gonna have to do another one. You're gonna do more, are you not?
Well, by the time this airs, it will have happened because literally tonight, in like 4 or 5 hours is our last ever Dino 101. So,
last ever? Sorry. Why not?
Is there
why?
A reason you're not going to do it anymore?
We've been doing him for, well, I did, when the pandemic started, we did 50 straight days, like even on the weekend, of Dino 101s at noon for everyone. It was free for everyone. So we had kids, families, adults, whatever.
That's awesome.
And then we've been doing for a year now a paid, ticketed with Atlas Obscura Friday nights, adults only. Very ridiculous Dino One. And it's been a year. It's getting warm out. People are getting vaccinated. Yeah. Like, people don't want to be on Zoom at like 9 p.m. on a Friday.
But you could do, but then maybe you could do real in person ones.
Monday.
You know what? I'm willing to announce this because I know this isn't going to come out yet. But yeah, we're doing like a live version called Science 101. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Okay. Well, there you go.
So it's not like you're gonna disappear. Yeah.
Oh my god!
So
you guys can be our first guest. You guys can be our first guest.
I would love to.
Truly, okay. We just have to get let out of the hellhole that is Ontario, Canada.
Yeah,
and then
we still don't have our second vaccine.
Yeah,
our
we're a little bit behind.
Oh, that's
we don't
right.
make vaccines
that's
in right. Canada.
There's a group of like dino. There's a group of us called the Dicknecks because that's what they call the long neck sauropod ones. The Dicknecks for obvious reasons.
Okay, if you say so.
It's just been a community that's come together during this pandemic through Dino 101, and I bring this up because there's one woman who lives in Ontario is just always complaining about the government.
The government's whack. Okay, well, where can people find you on Instagram, Twitter, etc.? Give us your handle.
If you send me an email, I'll come to your house. I'm just kidding.
Find you at their door.
I'm just kidding. On Twitter, which is the book I read the most. I don't read whole books, but Twitter. So I'm simply Dustin. Yeah, Dustin Growick on Twitter, and then Instagram. Okay. Dinosaur Whisperer, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great one.
And I'll post there about all these fun dinosaur things. I try, like, my big motto. One of my like SciComm, I guess, principles is like, don't take yourself too seriously and have a fun time.
Yeah.
There's enough very serious stuff out there. Like, I think of SciComm and I think of dinosaurs as a gateway drug to science, and they're like. Then you've got people excited, you're engaged. You can transition that conversation to literally anything having to do with our existence, life, climate change, whatever. But like, listen, we got, going back to what you said earlier, we got one shot at this. You're like, let's get out there, let's learn as much as we can, let's have a good time doing it. Period.
Full yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. That's so inspiring and awesome and true. And we are so with you on that. Making science fun and interesting. And
you guys have been doing it probably for longer than I have in a totally different format, which has been crushing it. So like, kudos to you. I know so many people that you have inspired to become SciCommers as well. So like, the love goes
both ways. That's so sweet. We've just really let the ball drop on dinosaurs. That's for sure. And that's why we loved having you on this podcast.
Honestly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For everyone listening, make sure you follow Dustin and hashtag SciNet Podcast. And we'll see you guys next week.
Post.
Bye. Should I stop recording?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.